Karras let that hang between them a moment, then replied, "Let us hope there is never again a need. But this Hepaximan is tenacious. It is not finished with us." Routh glanced at Karras from the corner of his eye. "I will be better prepared." Around a slow bend in the tunnel up ahead, there seemed to be a source of light. Rounding it, Karras saw bright daylight filtering in through a natural gap in the ceiling. "There's our exit," he said. "We need to hurry and hope the storm ravens are still in Vox range." Together, they jogged forward and began hauling their bodies up the rocky wall of the tunnel. Soon, they emerged into the baking heat of the day. They found themselves on a spur of beige rock. All around them, golden dunes stretched out to the horizon. The sun was piercingly bright, the sky a deep azure, flawless in all directions but south. To the south, the remnants of the mushroom cloud were still hanging in the air, a great broad column of smoke and dust that dominated the skyline. The two space marines climbed to the top of the tallest dune nearby.
"Talon Alpha to Reaper flight," voxed Karras. "Reaper flight, do you copy?"
"Nothing, just static."
"Talon Alpha to Reaper flight, respond!"
Again, nothing. Karras squinted into the distance and saw smoke on the far horizon, due west-northwest of their position. Tentatively, even somewhat anxiously, he sent thin tendrils of psychic energy questing in that direction and picked up familiar signatures. Talon Squad, unmistakable. The only member who didn't have a psychic signature was standing right beside him. There were others, too. A mix of Adeptus Astartes and humans. Saber Squad and Copless people, plus the pilots of the Storm Ravens.
"That way," said Karras, gesturing with a nod. "They must have gone down on the periphery of the blast."
He and Routh set off down the dune face in the direction of the smoke.
"It must have burned out their electronics,"
Karras nodded. "That would explain the Vox silence."
"We run!"
As they put on some speed, carving a channel across the hot sand, Karras anxiously searched his consciousness for any trace of Aranyi. Was she still in there, silently monitoring him? She seemed able to trespass upon his mind with such disturbing ease. He found no trace of her. The Eldar witch was gone. Her words, however, echoed in his mind, bothering him.
"Remember your debt to me. Stand aside when I ask it."
He had sworn an oath on his life and on the honor of his chapter, an oath to a filthy Xenos, true, but a Xenos that had saved his soul from damnation and disgrace. It was a heavy debt. She was truly powerful, her gifts well beyond his own. He could never have survived without her intervention. So now he owed her. Did he dare break their bargain? She was Xenos and he Death Watch. When the time came, would he dare to keep it? Chapter 39. Six powerful presences, their warp signatures far denser than those of the tribe's people that formed a seal of souls around them, the exception being Agus. Unanticipated, these six, troubling. Karras detected them as soon as Chathanahadik began to emerge through the grey skirts of pouring rain, in which the storm ravens flew. From the hold of Reaper 2, Karras reached out to Agga's mind. Her relief at his survival was foremost, and she welcomed him back warmly, but there was an unmissable undercurrent of tension and fear.
"Others have come, my lord," she told him, mind to mind. "Reshva! Like you, but not like you. Their leader has a turbulent soul. My people fear him greatly. He has ordered my son imprisoned under guard, a hostage to ensure our cooperation. Had there been a psyker among them, It would be I.
I will be with you soon, replied Karras. Do not risk your cover. You are unsanctioned. For now, let them believe they have the speaker, as your people believe it. I will assess things when I arrive.
Aga withdrew, emanating faith and gratitude, but her fear and tension had abated little. As the landing platform finished lowering the storm ravens into the hangar, Copley ordered all her people to get their gear in order. The wounded would need to be taken to the Medicaid facilities immediately. Bones needed resetting, wounds needed stitching, and much more besides. She caught Karras's gaze and tilted her head across the Storm Raven's hold to the Space Marines of Saber Squad. Oblivious to just how strong their enhanced hearing was, she murmured, "Will they commit to us, Scholar? Can you convince them to lend their strength to Arcturus until Shadowbreaker is over?" Karras looked over and met Androcles' gaze.
Wounded pride, thought Karras. Dishonor. Their handler and their alpha betrayed them into Xenos' hands for some reason we don't yet fully understand. And rage in abundance. They will join us, he thought. Redemption in their own eyes demands it, as it would of me.
And what of his own honor? Epsilon had slipped his grasp. What of his redemption? Arcturus could not afford to grant the Tau time to get the Inquisitor off-world, but neither could they move until she was located again. For that reason, more than anything else, they had returned to the Kashtu stronghold. The speakers had Ayin would be watching. Word would come. It had to. Karras emerged from Reaper 2's hold to see a Thunderhawk gunship, far larger than a Storm Raven, beloved and trusted of all Space Marine chapters. It sat silent, a great sleeping dragon with scales of black ceramite. Fuel lines snaked from its belly. The rear ramp was down, but all the lights were off. He didn't recognize it, but it bore the iconography of both the Death Watch and the Ordo Xenos. And he could see that the armor was stealth-coated, and that the engines and exhausts were modified for noise reduction. Standing just in the shadow of its boxy nose, a few meters from the forward landing gear, was a large figure in distinctive Terminator armor, all black with silver on the left arm and pauldron. Copley was busy barking orders at her people as they unloaded war gear from Reaper flight. The Space Marines of Talon and Saber were filtering down ramps. Chiron was being uncoupled from Magna grapples. Karras stood regarding the figure in shadow. Neither moved. He heard Talon come to stand behind him, lining up in silence, all staring at the figure in front. Saber formed up on Androcles and watched quietly from a few meters back.
"Who's the Shy One, hiding under the gunship?" said Zed as he stepped abreast of Karras.
Karras put a hand out and halted him.
"Stay here," he told his kill team.
Zed shrugged. He and his brothers watched as Karras strode forward to meet the shadowed hulk. As Karras neared, the other moved out to meet him. An ancient, nigh-indestructible suit of tactical dreadnought armor here on Tychonis, when things were so precarious, should have been a welcome sight. But Karras could read the aura of the wearer, and that aura was as dark as the Death Watch black in which it was painted. They stopped, facing each other. As tall as he was, Karras had to look up to meet the eyes of the Space Marine in front of him. The Terminator stood a full head and a half taller than he. At a glance, he registered the iconography of Chapter, Kill Team, honor markings.
"You are Yanis Broden, Scimitar Alpha, battle brother of the Black Templars," said Karras.
"And you are Lyandro Karras," said the other.
Karras inclined his head in a slight bow.
"Well met, brother."
Broden glared down at him, pointedly not returning the greeting. The Templar's face was of typical cast for a Space Marine. The brow was heavy, the nose strong and aquiline, the jawbone square and broad. There were structural similarities to Voss's, naturally,
the Black Templars being a successor chapter of the Imperial Fists. But here was none of Omni's warmth and openness. Broden's face was as hard and cold as frost-rimed rock, made all the more fearsome by the profusion of scars and claw marks, testimony to a life of intense, close-range combat. Couched in the gorget and cowl of that Terminator suit, Broden's face was all the more fearsome. But Karras was unmoved.
"You understand the reason for my presence here," said Broden.
"I can guess," said Karras. The Templar scowled, then cast his glance over the Talon members watching from further back.
"Talon and Arcturus have proven inadequate to their mission. Epsilon evaded you. Shadowbreaker is a failure. It is over."
"It's not over. Epsilon remains on Tychonis for now. We need only locate her, and..."
"No,"
snapped Broden.
"It is I, Karras, who need to locate her. You need only do as you are told from here on."
He stepped in close, towering over Karras like a warhound titan. Karras cocked an eyebrow, utterly unimpressed. Was this really what passed for the best of the best among the Black Templars?
"I have been placed in operational command, charged with salvaging this debacle," said Broden. "Archangel's powers will be limited to tactical command of her people, as yours will be to yours. Both of you are now directly under my command."
Karras cursed. "Show me," he demanded. Broden held out his right hand and opened his fist. There in his palm was a red holo crystal in a setting of silver. With his thumb, Broden activated it. Hololithic light began to shimmer a foot above the crystal. The iconography of the Ordo Xenos rezzed into view, followed by the skull symbol of the Death Watch. Then several authentication codes that the sensors set in Karras's power armor verified as current and legitimate. Reams of data began scrolling before Karras, imprinting on his retina, coding itself into the memory centers of his brain. Broden spoke the truth. Sigmar was handing Shadowbreaker over to the command of the Black Templar. All task force elements were now answerable to him. The display ended, and the Templar closed his fist over the gem once again and dropped it to his side. Karras searched his face for a sign of the smugness that had crept into his aura, but that face betrayed nothing.
"I have also imprisoned the rebel leader, this Speaker of the Sands, to be executed if his people do not comply, absolutely. He is unsanctioned and will be dealt with post-mission, but for now he provides leverage."
"The Speaker has shown nothing but full support for our mission," hissed Karras. "Rebels fought and died to ensure the Tau forces at Alel Atarag were not reinforced during our assault. Your decision is an open betrayal of their loyalty to the Emperor. It will only cause resentment and alienation. It is not the way to play this."
"You had your chance, Death Spectre. You and Copley played things your way and got nowhere. Had you done your jobs, I'd not be here at all."
"Then go back," growled Karras, his fists clenched at his sides.
"We have it in hand."
He knew Broden was baiting him, getting him to display emotions he should have well in hand, but the Templar had attacked his honor and his pride, two things guaranteed to push a space marine to the edge of his self-control. Karras forced himself to calmness. He held Broden's eye, saw satisfaction glinting there. "Scimitar Alpha has operational command," he said coldly. "Talon Alpha acknowledges. The will of the Emperor will be served. Does the commander have instructions?" Broden looked over at the members of Saber Squad. They stood there, still clad in black bodysuits, watching things unfold in silence.
"The remains of Epsilon's kill team," said Broden.
Karras nodded. "Betrayed by the rogue Inquisitor and two of their own. One of those was their Alpha. A third was killed by the Tau."
The son of Antaeus is the new Alpha by default. Cursed founding or not, he's the ranking member, so he will have tactical command of his team. Tell me of the others.
Karras turned to look at them and ran through what he knew. The four remaining Saber operators stared back, well aware they were being discussed, able to hear every word. There was Strigo of the Carcharodons, whose aura, Karras noted, was so dark and stormy with feral violence that he seemed likely to lean towards berserker tendencies. Next to him stood Pelion of the Marines Errant, somewhat fine-featured for a space marine, but missing most of his left ear. Gedeon of the Howling Griffins stood next to Pelion. The two were of equal height, but while Pelion was beardless and short-haired, Gedeon looked wild, his hair and beard the same bright red as Darian Routh's. They framed his battle-scarred face like a lion's mane, which was appropriate, given the somewhat leonine cast to his features. Rowan of the Revilers was last. Eyes black, skin chalk-white, both a genetic inheritance from his chapter's progenitor, the Raven Guard.
"They look diminished," said Broden when Karras was done.
Karras snorted. The Templar could not see the fire that flared and danced in their auras. Their war gear was never recovered. There wasn't time. If diminished, then in number only.
And defeated not at all. They are eager to redeem themselves and see Epsilon and the traitors brought to account. And they long for Tau blood.
Broden nodded.
"They will operate under my command, with the rest of you."
"That will be their choice," said Karras. "They are not Sigmar's assets. They have no obligation to you."
"If they seek redemption, as you say, they have no choice," said Broden.
He gestured with a tilt of his head to the Thunderhawk behind him.
"There is no power armor for them, but we have weapons and other supplies. They will be equipped as well as we are able. I leave it to you to make sure they understand the new command structure. I will inform Major Copley of the changes myself."
"Her people fought hard," said Karras with genuine feeling. "They exemplified the qualities of Ordo Special Forces, and without their systems intrusion work, the assault would have been a disastrous bloodbath. Archangel is highly capable. I advise you to ask her counsel on all operational matters."
Broden waved that off with an armored hand. "She failed in her command. If it were up to me, she'd face an Ordo court-martial. But your assessment is noted. I dismiss you now to see to your war gear and to inform Saber Squad of the new order of things."
"A court-martial?" thought Karras with suppressed outrage. "This one would cut off his hand to spite his arm."
"If my team are to work with yours, Broden," he said. The Black Templar was already moving off, each step shaking the rock-crete under him.
But he paused and half-turned back towards Karras.
"Introductions will wait, Death Spectre. Just make sure your people understand the situation. If anyone steps out of order, I will hold you responsible, and you will not find me very forgiving."
Karras's jaw rippled, and his fists flexed, as he watched the giant stomp away from him. He knew already that he didn't like Scimitar Alpha. He had met such Adeptus Astartes before, overzealous, arrogant, inclined towards overkill tactics and unrefined force. Not uncommon traits among the ranks of the Imperium's greatest warriors. It was something about the martial path. It led one either to humility or arrogance, and seldom anywhere in the middle. To this Broden, Talon Squad, Saber Squad, and Arcturus would be little more than pieces on the board. He'd place his Scimitar Squad for maximum glory in whatever lay ahead. So the real question, when the bullets started flying, and the air was filled with deadly plasma, pulse, and railgun rounds, was not so much if Karras would have to defy him, but when. He and his Talon brothers had come a long way together. He would not stand by and watch them die for the honor and glory of Yanis Broden.
Chapter 40.
No time! No time!
Hassan Amin had to focus hard to keep his hands from trembling. His heart was in his mouth. Its rapid beating drowned out everything else. As for his vision, it was hyper-sharp, enhanced by fear and adrenaline. Of all the Hadayin in the spaceport town of Kurdiza, he alone had a cover role that granted access to part of the spaceport's defense grid. He alone could open the approach window for the Adeptus Astartes. He sent word of the time, the place, the length of the gap he could create. 4 minutes only, and those four fixed with no margin for error. If he messed the timing up, noble space marines would die. Their craft ripped out of the air by Tau missiles and AI-controlled railgun fire.
Blue chip to white node, black chip to black wire, almost done, almost done.
He looked at his wrist chrono. 10 seconds more to finish rigging the charge. 40 seconds to race back to his assigned work route, to checking the air-cooling control circuits on the first and second floors. As soon as he was there, safely away from the blast, he'd watch the last seconds tick off, then hit the remote detonator in his pocket. The Earthcast would rush into action, desperate to find the problem and reroute power and control through secondary channels. That would take them 4 minutes, so that was the hard limit on the infiltration window.
By then, the Reshvar will be within the perimeter, and I will slip away in the chaos.
Almost done. Right on schedule. His fingers released the last clip, its metal teeth cinching on exposed wire. That was when he heard the shout from behind him. It was in Tau at first, clipped and harsh, but the speaker soon switched to Tychonite Gothic on noting the full head of black hair and the nut-brown skin of the neck exposed above the collar.
Walker, stop what you're doing and explain yourself!
The voice was gruff, commanding, dense with that peculiar accent only the Watercast ever managed to shed. Hassan had no weapon. It had taken all his guile just to get the small explosive through security. 12 years he had spent solidifying his cover here. A perfect service record. Unremarkable, but no black marks either. No Hadayin could afford to be noteworthy.
All for this. All for this day. This moment.
He looked again at his chrono. He was several seconds behind now. He turned and saw the speaker. A squat, square-faced Earthcast, flanked by a stern-looking Firecast soldier, whose blue three-fingered hand was resting close to the pistol on his right hip. Hassan waved them closer. Familiar faces, but they weren't known to him by name. They must have seen him on the monitors and come down from the upper floors where he seldom worked. They were walking towards him now, flat faces stern. Eager to get away from the bomb he had just placed, he walked out to meet them.
No! Snapped the fire warrior. Stay where you are, and keep your hands in plain sight!
The Earthcast technician muttered to himself in Tau as they neared, assuming, as the Blueskins usually did, that a human worker could never understand his race's rich and highly nuanced tongue. Hassan translated easily in his head.
This thinking five toes isn't supposed to be here. I have to get away now, he thought. I have to!
Again, a quick glance at his chrono. His heart sank. The window he'd promised couldn't be changed. It couldn't. Space Marines' lives. The liberation of his people. Vengeance on the filthy pogs. Suddenly weary, his soul heavy with all the years of lies, of suffering their proximity, he committed to the last course of action available.
I'm glad you're here, he told the Tau as they closed on him. I was looking for a flaw in the air-cooling control line when I found something unexpected. I don't think it's supposed to be there. If the noble Earthcast will take a look...
The Tau technician clacked his toothplates in disdain and pushed his way past Hassan, the soldier following suit, peering over the technician's shoulder to where Hassan was gesturing, right at the bomb. Hassan took another quick look at the chrono on his wrist and started counting backwards in his head. Truly, he would have liked to live.
But I am Hadayin, he told himself resignedly. I will find my reward. by the Emperor's side.
The stocky technician leaned forward and stared hard, raising a hand to his short, square chin.
That is no Tau device. It is a Goela thing.
Hassan put his hand in his overalls pocket and gripped the detonator.
Ah, you're right, he said as his thumb found the trigger. I see what it is now. How stupid of me. I should not have troubled you.
The fire warrior looked round at him, impatience creasing his blue-gray brow.
Then what is it?
He demanded.
You stupid, ugly pug, said Hassan with a final smile.
It's a bomb!
He pressed the trigger right on time. The blast killed all three of them instantaneously. Tower 6, covering the north-northeast approach on the spaceport's perimeter, abruptly went dead. Defense control consoles in the spaceport's main control center leapt to life, alarm glyphs rezzing into the air above them. Tau engineers began jabbering at each other. Senior techs began barking at aerospace monitoring personnel. The latter frantically searched their holo displays for any sign of inbound contacts. They found nothing. No scanner returns, no detections, only expected traffic, and most of that was fighter patrols at high altitude, placed on special duty when Commander Coldwave arrived 2 days ago. The Chasseurs had immediately ordered both a massive increase in security and a temporary cessation on all non-military activities at the spaceport. It could be no coincidence that Cadiz's automated defense perimeter now had a gaping hole in it. It was almost precisely 3.5 minutes after the blast that fire warriors in Tower 6 found the charred remains of 3 bodies in a smoke-filled corridor. Even as they frantically relayed this information back to Central Defense, claiming deliberate sabotage, it was too late. Reapers 1 and 2 had already dropped Talon Squad and Saber Squad by zipline within the spaceport walls, then pulled back out to a safe distance to wait. With quiet speed, 10 shadow-clad figures split into 2 groups of 5 and moved off in opposite directions towards their first objectives.
Good hunting, Talon, voxed
Androcles, as he and his squad melted into the darkness.
Good hunting, Saber,
Karras voxed back.
Redemption or death?
Chapter 41.
You are right, Inquisitor, said
Coldwave, as he stood looking down at a hollow screen. The woman in black stood by his side, her focus on the same display. Behind him, glaring over his shoulders, towered her 2 giant killers. Coldwave hated when they came close like this. They stank, and the smell was so offensively unnatural. It never seemed to communicate any other emotion than their lust for killing. Did they never think of anything else? Despite how they made his fingers itch, he was certainly not about to give them the satisfaction of seeing him in discomfort at their proximity. His tone was flat, giving nothing away, but Epsilon knew he was irritated at the thought that his gambit in the desert canyon had failed. Talon Squad's survival of a nuclear blast would only add to the tales his firecast troopers were telling each other out of earshot of their officers.
I told you they would not be easy to erase, she said with a slight smile.
Was the woman a complete fool? She actually seemed amused. Coldwave was most definitely not. But he gave the blueskin equivalent of a shrug and said,
They come to meet their death in any case. They will not be allowed to interfere with our departure. I have issued deployment orders. No matter their number, they will find us unyielding.
One of the giants spoke, his voice so deep and rough that Coldwave sometimes had to strain to make out the words. Both pretended not to know the Tau language, but he was certain they did. They simply refused to use it. The speaker was the one called Cabanon, he of the ugly, all-mechanical arms and legs. Why was his order known as the Iron Hands, Coldwave wondered, when they obviously boasted titanium prostheses that extended well beyond their hands?
Stupid Goela!
He smelled by far the worst of the two.
Do not underestimate the Death Watch, he told Coldwave.
You did so before, Shaso, and the Tower of the Forgotten was lost to you along with hundreds of your people. The size of your force does not matter to the Adeptus Astartes of the Death Watch. We can turn any situation to our advantage. Talon Squad may use your very confidence against you here today.
He nodded towards the other, called Lucianos.
But we are here. That bodes well for you. They will not prevail.
Again, thought Coldwave, that arrogance, that pride when they speak of this Death Watch. How can they speak so smugly of a thing they have already betrayed, as if they still belong to it somehow? I don't understand these damnable creatures and their constant twisting of identities and loyalties. They are as changeable as the winds in the storm season.
He had told his people to watch the Inquisitor's bodyguards constantly. He trusted them not at all. They might explode into mayhem and slaughter any time it suited them. His accord with the woman was all that held them back. It wouldn't last. He was certain they would try for his life eventually.
But not while the woman still needs us. Not while she still petitions for access to the star systems that interest her so.
When he and the Inquisitor finally stood before the High Council of Ethereals on Tau, he would secretly petition the Aunes to send an exploratory force to the region. He had to know why the woman was so desperate to gain access. What did she expect to find? Until he had his answers, she could not be allowed the permission she sought. For now, she still had much to share in the effort to create the ultimate weapon against the Yehe. That was her only value. The moment it was no longer a factor, he would take great personal pleasure in watching the light go from her eyes. She was more dangerous than a pit of pregnant fire fangs. He walked away from the monitor, thankful that the smell of the Space Marines did not follow him. Before him curved the great broad hull of the ship that would take them into orbit, there to dock with the interstellar craft the High Council had sent. From Tychonis, further east, rimward, deeper into Tau space. It would be several weeks of skipping across the surface of the void, what the Gwela called the warp, before they would arrive at their destination. The breeding project would continue throughout the trip. The Inquisitor's Geller field generator would continue to isolate their specimens from the Tyranid hive mind.
How perilously critical that generator is,
he thought unhappily. If it ever faltered for long, the pure-strain gene-stealers, and even perhaps some of the Tau Tyranid hybrids they were transporting, would suddenly find themselves able to signal the hive mind. Such a signal would, as he understood it, bring the might of the Devourer down on this entire sector of space. Tychonis and the system in which it sat would be consumed and left dead in the wake of that unquenchable hunger. Again, the importance of what they were doing here struck him. The Council should never have brushed him and Anzi aside all those years ago, posting them to such an insignificant world as this. Pure politics. Less honorable servants of the greater good had schemed and brought influence to bear behind the scenes. Coldwave had been originally marked for a far greater posting. Aunzi, too, was to be honored with a rich and vibrant world on which to share his guidance and wisdom. It mattered no longer. Their political rivals had thought themselves victorious, but in truth, they had accidentally ceded the ground with an opportunity for redemption and glory beyond all expectation. Was it fate that had intersected the Inquisitor's path with his? Or was it all down to her machinations? Had she chosen Tychonis well in advance? No matter. The Accord had placed in Tau hands the first real chance to save their entire race from its greatest threat.
And old rivals will know. They will see.
and they will bow their heads in shame.
A senior Earthcast tech saw him gazing at the ship, and hustled over in that particular way unique to the shortest and physically strongest of the Tau.
"Sha, so," trilled the tech.
Coldwave turned and gave a curt nod.
"How close are we to readiness?"
The tech gestured to the ship's rear, where its massive engines hummed, the exhausts glowing a hot, dull red. Thick cables snaked away from ports in the ship's sides, running to reactors and vast cylindrical tanks. Earthcast techs in non-military exosuits were loading heavy crates via ramps at the fore and aft.
"Within the Deca cycle, honored hunter." "Then we are behind," rasped Coldwave.
The tech began exuding a particular scent, a mix of guilt, resentment, and unworthiness, tinged with a little dislike.
"Forgiveness, hunter, but the special cargo presented unique challenges." "My orders on that were executed precisely," said Coldwave.
It was anything but a question.
"They were, hunter. I saw to it myself." "For the greater good," said Coldwave. "Always," said the tech. "My life for the greater good." "Very well. I hold you to the Deca cycle. Do not disappoint me. In doing so, you disappoint the Aun, a stain on your standing you might never remove, Builder."
He strode off, leaving the tech staring at his back, exuding that mix of emotions even more strongly than before. Two Aircast pilots, one male, one female, tall and willowy, frail-looking in their tight-fitting flight suits, moved to either side of him, but stayed half a pace back in respect.
"Word has just reached us, hunter," said the one on the right. "The Kashto and Ishto rebels have attacked our air bases at Nah Sol and Zhoushan. The fighting is heavy, many dead."
Coldwave whirled to face them. He met the gaze of one, then the other.
"Should I request air support from those bases? I need it delivered. Did they get fighters into the air?"
Again, it was the one on the right who spoke.
"Our pilots were not able to take off. The assaults were very sudden and carefully coordinated. It is your Firecast brothers fighting to restore control on whom we must depend. If they can clear the runways, even temporarily, we can get Razor Sharks and Sun Sharks into the air."
"I don't need bombers," snapped Coldwave. "Khadiza must remain operational after our departure. Prioritize the launch of fighters. I want to know as soon as you have them in the air. I want to know how many and how long it will take them to get here if I should need them. Is that understood?"
The tall, slender Tau touched the fingers of their right hands to their upper abdomens and gave brief bows. Coldwave left them to follow his instructions. It was time to make his own preparations. The Space Marines, this Talon squad the Black Giants kept talking about, had somehow survived. The bombing of the perimeter air defense tower and the rebel attacks on the neighboring air bases could only mean one thing. They were coming for the woman. Under other circumstances, Coldwave would have gladly given them her cold corpse. They were coming, but the line stopped here. This time, he would obliterate them personally and destroy the dark legend that was growing around them among his soldiers. Space Marines bled like everything else. They died. They just took a little more killing than most. He entered the subhangar housing his battlesuit. It gleamed in the light of the looms, beautiful and noble, a martial masterwork of his people, calling to him, eager for union so that they could relish the surge and flow of battle again, the grace, the power, the freedom. Here was the doom of his enemies, the vehicle of his glory and honor, his success.
"Patience, mighty one," he told the silent giant.
He ignored the curious looks of the techs, still busy arming and priming its advanced combat systems. He was grinning, aware that he was exuding eagerness and confidence, and a hunger for violent victory. What of it? He had every right. He strode forward and placed a proud hand on the smooth, armored leg of the machine.
The blood of powerful foes will be shed today. They are on their way, foolish and eager to die. They are coming, and we shall oblige for the greater good.
Chapter 42. Less than an hour till sunrise. The Tau would have plugged the gap in their perimeter by now, rerouting power through other circuits to bring the sabotaged Tower 6 back online. As he led Talon through the darkness, Karras glanced at the sky, saw the spray of bright stars there, the tiny, distant orb of Tychonis's only moon, Goetha. Sigmar had to be in system somewhere, the Saint Navarre cloaked and undetectable to the Tau. Broden and Scimitar couldn't have travelled here otherwise. Thunderhawk gunships couldn't traverse the warp. There was a Tau craft up there too, Aga had told him. She had seen it in a scrying. She could not read Epsilon's prime futures, but the chances were high that the ship had come for the Inquisitor and her research project. This assault on the spaceport really would be a last chance. So far, only Talon and Saber were on the ground. The only way to get the rest of the assault force on site was to knock out the Tau air defense network for the whole facility. Two options then. Take it down via the defense control consoles in the command center of the main spaceport building, heavily defended, and a surefire way to bring every Tau in the region running straight to your location. Or knock out power for the whole damned town. A more temporary solution, but a lot more viable given the available assets. With primary power down, the circuits would switch over to drawing power from stations outside the immediate local area. Those were outside the task force's reach, but the switch from a primary local source to secondary distance sources would take the Tau an estimated 11 minutes. 11 minutes in which the Thunderhawk, call sign Black Eagle, along with the Storm Ravens of Reaper Flight, would do a missile run, knocking out as many of the armed turrets as they could manage before the spaceport power came back online. The whole town around the spaceport would be seething with ground forces by then. Enemy air elements were being held at bay by the rebels, but that could change any time. Situational advantage was so tenuous. The pendulum could swing against them at any given moment. Karras could only deal with what was in front of him, however. He pushed the later stages of the assault from his mind. Saber Squad would hit fuel silos and cause a disaster. Fires would spread. The Tau would have to deal with that or see half the town destroyed. Talon would hit the power station and open the way for the others. He led Watcher, Prophet, Omni, and Ghost through the shadowed streets, fully armed and armored, but stealthed and all but silent. They passed through the main warehousing area, where off-planet imports were stored before distribution. Twice they encountered small Tau patrols, the fire warriors made complacent by the late hour and the years of uneventful duty. Tychonis had been too peaceful for too long. Even with Coldwave on site, bringing extra fire cast forces with him, the average Tau soldier saw little cause for heightened vigilance. Events at the Tower had been kept contained, data shared on a need-to-know basis only, and most Tau simply did not need to know. Each patrol met a quick, quiet end, courtesy of silenced bolt rounds. Both times, Karras, Routh, and Solarian lined up their targets and fired simultaneously on a vox-whispered three count. Heads exploded into dark, wet mist. Bodies hit the dirt, then were dragged off into cover. With each patrol eliminated, Talon pressed closer and closer to their goal. They could see the tall, curving structure of the main power facility up ahead, towering over the storehouses, machine works, and admin buildings that surrounded it. Red lights, a warning to low aircraft, winked in the night from towers and antenna masts. "Almost there," boxed Salarian quietly, from his point-man position 20 meters ahead of the others. The streets end here. Open ground around the power station, with fire-cast gun towers looking out over about 30 meters of killing ground. Searchlights and heavy weapons. 2 blueskins per tower. Hardwall perimeter, not fencing. 10 meters high, so we either go through the main gate or blast our own. Noisy either way. Suggest we use cables to go over. It would be easier for Zed. He had deployed with a jump pack. Broden had left loadout selection to Talon Alpha's discretion. Karras had opted to let his team deploy with the war gear of their choice. The Raven Guard went with the high mobility option, knowing that most of the fighting would be outdoors, at least for Talon. The Tau were notorious for trying to stay at mid to long range. He'd robbed them of that choice. The jump pack would allow him to stay right on them no matter how much they moved. Here it would get him over the walls with a single thought impulse and a brief flare of jets. Karras wanted a proper visual before he would commit to an entry method. Up ahead, he could see Salarian waiting, his right pauldron jutting slightly from the cover of the shadows at the end of the street. "Prophet," boxed the Death Spectre. "Go high. We'll follow you up. Once I've got a good visual on things, I'll decide how we'll handle it." Salarian grunted an affirmative. The edge of the pauldron melted into the shadows. A few moments later, looking up, Karras saw the ultramarine on the roof, briefly silhouetted in black against the dark navy of the star-frosted sky. Karras followed him up, shouldering his bolter, and jumping several meters to grab a ledge. From there, he moved to an outer stairwell that led to the roof's northeast corner. Once on the roof, he moved at a crouch to the corner where Salarian lay belly down, looking through the scope of his beloved, personally modified sniper rifle. On another rooftop to the right, Routh, Voss, and Zed took up observation positions. Karras assessed the scene before him. Through booted feet, he could feel the generators and exchangers vibrating even from here, a constant low hum. Salarian had been right. It would be easy enough to take down the Tau in the gun towers. But blowing a hole in the wall, or trying to rush the main gate, seemed ill-advised. The longer he could keep the Tau guessing, the better. He dipped into his power, murmuring the litany of sight beyond sight, and sent his astral presence beyond the walls. As he had suspected, there was a reasonable fire-cast presence within the grounds. A TX-7 Hammerhead was sitting just inside the main gates. Its engines were powered down, but its weapon systems were fully activated. "Armor," he told the others, "just inside and to the left of the main gate. Ion cannon and 2 gun drones. A squad of 10 infantry beside it. 3 more squads of 5 running clockwise patrols, each escorted by 2 drones.
"That complicates taking down the targets on the towers," grated Routh.
"Can't have bodies falling from the towers," said Zed. "They all have to go down nice and quiet and steady."
"Wake me when you've a proper challenge," said Salarian.
"I hate to agree with the Prince of Macrag," voxed Voss sarcastically, "but at this range, it should be a breeze."
The Imperial Fist had opted for an Infernus heavy bolter, extremely large, noisy, and cumbersome. Had anyone else chosen such a weapon, Karras would have vetoed it. But Voss wasn't just anyone. Heavy weapons didn't slow him down as they did others. As much as the Infernus wasn't ideal for the opening phase of the op, Karras knew they would all be glad of its power later, when the fighting started. Once the sneaking around was over and the Tau were properly roused, Voss's affinity for seriously heavy firepower would prove its worth. For now, Voss lowered it to the rooftop and tugged his silenced bolt pistol from the maglock on his right cuiss. He flicked the safety off and chambered around.
"Ghost, watch her," said Karras.
"Circle around and establish good kill angles on the northeast and northwest towers. Omni has the southeast. Prophet, go cover the southwest. I'll take the 2 towers at the main gate. When you're in position with a good bead on your targets, Vox in and wait. He felt them move off more than saw them, tracking their souls automatically, with one obvious exception. Then, Karras rose from his position, slipped back to the rear edge of the roof, dropped to the sandy ground below, and with the buildings around him as cover, pushed south, until he was sure he was parallel with the main gates. Soon, he was in position, crouching on the corner of a storehouse rooftop with a good view of the main gate and the towers on either side of it. With the exception of Salarion, who had the farthest to go, the others voxed back that they were ready. Salarion confirmed a few seconds later.
"Scholar," voxed Routh, "we need to do this before Saber blow the fuel silos to the east. The whole town is going to wake up when that happens. It will put these blueskins on immediate alert."
"Agreed," replied Karras. "Now listen carefully, all of you." And he told them exactly how 5 Death Watch Space Marines cloaked in shadow were going to overcome 31 alien soldiers, 6 armed drones, and a heavily armored battle tank. Chapter 43. Space Marine scout armor with a layer of photoreactive optical camouflage cells under a transparent coating of LAS and plasma ablative polymer. Light, easy to move in. Pity it offered so little real protection. The feeling didn't even come close to full power armor. Still, Androcles was grateful nonetheless. The Black Templar, Broden, was as cold and contemptuous a space marine as he'd ever met. And it was all too apparent that he saw Talon and Saber as little more than tools with which to shape his own success. Despite all that, how could the son of Antaeus feel anything but gratitude? From being a Tau prisoner just days ago, to armed and loosed upon the foe, as it should be. A shot at redemption, at retribution.
"This is the Emperor's will."
He placed the last of his demo charges and moved off to the rendezvous to await the others. The Carcharodon, Strigo, was already there, hunched in the darkness, breathing like an animal through his razor-lined jaws like he always did. He and Androcles nodded at each other in the dark. The Carcharodon had never been much for words. Gedeon of the Howling Griffins joined them next in the shadow of the guardhouse, where they'd left the corpses of the Fire Warriors protecting the silos. 4 swift, silent blade kills, no alarms raised. Androcles was proud of his brothers. Their time in captivity had done nothing to blunt their edge. Each had wisely spent their days of imprisonment in deep meditation and visualization, a powerful tool that kept important neural pathways from degenerating while out of active use.
"Charges placed," whispered Gedeon. "It'll be quite a show."
Gedeon was honorable, dutiful, steadfast. Androcles liked him. But as newly named Saber Alpha, Androcles had also had to deal with something he hadn't seen coming. Gedeon had caused a serious problem back at the rebel capital. On his introduction to Scimitar IV, Van Velden of the Executioners, old hatred had surged to the surface. The Executioners had wreaked havoc on the Howling Griffins during the Badab War, reducing their numbers drastically in a tragic clash that should never have happened. An old wound, but one never healed. Though the Executioners had been sentenced to a century-long penitent crusade in recompense, nothing would ever be enough in the eyes of the Howling Griffins. Gedeon had struck Van Velden full in the face before anyone else could act. It was Lyandro Karras who had torn them off each other, tossing them apart with a psychic snap of his terrible power. Androcles had caught the look Broden had thrown Karras then, wary of where the real power lay in that room, despite operational rank. Few space marines, if any, stood a chance against a battle-hardened librarian. They were a different animal entirely. The apparent ease with which Karras rendered 2 space marine veterans all but helpless had clearly unsettled the Black Templar. Rightly so. They seemed as children before his power. Gedeon had raged at being pulled off the Executioner, For all his honor on the battlefield, he was unable to control himself in the full fire of his inner anger and hate. Androcles had removed him, talked him down, temporarily. Once the operation was over, if both lived, the fires of retribution would flare in him again. But later was later, for now it mattered more that his mind was on the mission. Pelion and Rowan joined the rest, charges placed. Or looked at Androcles.
"We don't blow the silos till we're well away," he said. "Burning fuel will flood the area. Fires will spread quickly. Buildings will burn. The Tau will respond hard, sending troops in force, doubling or tripling patrols, running drone sweeps. I want us well on our way to the spaceport grounds by then, to the true fight."
"To Cabanon and Lucianos," growled Pelion.
"To the backstabbing whore,"
hissed Strigo, eyes flashing.
"I will see traitor blood spilled before this day is through," Rowan insisted.
The reviler was typically almost as quiet as Strigo, but there was real venom in his words. He spoke for all of them. Androcles found himself picturing the faces of the three who had betrayed them, faces he had trusted, respected once. Aye, it was hard not to want blood. But the woman could not be harmed, and he reminded them of this. They would have to make do with the blood of the brothers who had turned against them. The Ordo would deal with the woman. Traitors to the Inquisition did not die quickly.
"My mind is as yours,"
growled Androcles through gritted teeth.
"But revenge is not why we are here. We are Death Watch, and we have a job to do. If we are to have a chance at justice, the Emperor will give it to us when the time is right. Now, move out."
As one, they slipped away from the silos, heading southwest through narrow streets, silently slaying Tau foot patrols where they found them, and hiding the bodies as best they could. Soon they reached the edge of the effective range of their detonators. With consummate stealth, the cells in their armor bending what little light there was around them, blending them into the dark pre-dawn. They climbed to the roof of a storehouse and looked back the way they had come.
"As one,"
said Androcles, holding forward the detonator in his left hand. The others raised their own. The son of Antaeus grinned.
"It's morning. Let's wake the blueskins up. To the worst day of their lives."
Chapter 44. One word, a dozen deaths.
"Now!"
Karras had already opened his inner gates to a trickle of power from the Immaterium. He channeled it into speeding his perceptions and reflexes, slowing down the flow of time as he experienced it. With the main gate boasting two gun towers, he had twice the number of Tau lookouts to kill than anyone else. Only this way, utilizing his gift, could he execute his part of the plan. With his bolter's crosshairs on one fire warrior, then another, he squeezed the trigger twice. Two soft coughs from his weapon's muzzle. Two heads twitched, one, then another, as rounds struck dead center in each skull. No explosions. Solid rounds for this, not mass reactive. Solid rounds were cleaner, quieter, but rarely seen outside Death Watch ops like this. With his synapses still psychically supercharged, time flowed like mud rather than water. He zeroed in on his targets in the second tower. His first two kills hadn't yet dropped to their knees before his bolter coughed again. Once, twice, two more heads struck dead center. Job done, he lessened his draw on the warp. Time snapped back into standard flow. Four bodies dropped in rapid succession, disappearing from view behind waist-high walls. One after another, his squad brothers voxed in their success. Karras sent out questing strands of psychic awareness. The Tau stationed below the watchtowers were oblivious to the kills above them. All around the power station perimeter, the Xenos on lookout had dropped silently in pairs. None had fallen from their nests. Flawless. But now it got harder. Each space marine knew what to do. Karras gave the word. Zeed wasn't about to argue. Karras had been clear. Use of the Raven Guard's jump pack was a risk. Even auto-modified, it would probably tip off the tower on the ground. So he'd ordered Zeed to go by zipline, like everyone else. It was the quietest option available. Zeed had to concede that. Once everyone was in position above the circling patrols and the squad inside the gate, they would unleash death in synchronicity. No heroics, no reckless mistakes, not Zeed's style at all, but he saw the need well enough. The main power station structure was typical of Tau construction, all smooth curves and sloping sides, but there was a walkway, an encircling balcony halfway up that led to several emergency exits, presumably for the Earthcast techs inside to use if there was an accident. Talon's squad would cross to it before dropping on the foe. Zeed fixed the zipline harpoon attachment from his webbing to the muzzle of his silenced bolt pistol. From his perch overlooking the power station, he took aim at a point on the wall some 2.5 meters above the balcony, enough to clear the railing there. Around the power station, the others voxed their readiness. Karras counted them down. 5 plasteel harpoons bit into the outer surface of the building, zip lines spooling out behind them, then going taut. An anchoring round was then fired into the rooftop at each Space Marine's feet, fixing the lines in place. Zeed checked that his armor's stealth systems were fully engaged, masking the bright Death Watch silver of pauldron and left arm. All good.
Ready, Scholar!
The rest of the team confirmed. Karras gave the word. From 5 positions around the station, dark shapes quietly crossed the air above the heads of the Tau patrolling within the outer walls and landed with practiced agility on the walkway. Zeed unclipped himself from the line and walked south around the building to meet with Karras above the main entrance facing the gate. He found him there, looking down on the hammerhead tank and the squad standing not far from it.
Scholar.
Ghost. The tank's turret hatch was open. The gunner was standing half